The views and opinions expressed on the following pre-recorded program are not necessarily those of Henry Ford College or WHFR.
This is the father of Considor College. We want him to say a few words. First, just say hello to our WHFR audience. He's going to give us some headphones.
You can't hear her. I'm sorry. You need my headphones
okay.
to hear her, huh?
All right. We're going to introduce ourselves, the father of Considor Colors, and say hello to the WHFR radio audience, listening audience.
Hi, all you. Ishmael here.
Okay. Ishmael, how do you enjoy the difference in venue?
It's both venues are amazing.
They are.
When this venue clicks, it really does click.
It does. It really, really does.
I wish there was more room in the theater. Last night we had so many people that just couldn't get in.
Yes, yes.
But it's a great theater, and the DIA has really done us a favor.
Yes, yes, yes. Okay, and some of them, you want to go down memory lane with us?
If you like.
Oh, okay. Well, wait, I'll let you start off because you've got so many memories that you can share with us.
Okay, well, the Concert of Colors was put together by the communities of color in Detroit, New Detroit. Asked them to come together, and they began doing things in the neighborhoods.
Mm-hmm.
And then they were asked by Mayor Young, actually I was,
mm-hmm.
to move it to Shane Park. And
okay.
so we had a one-day festival of the different communities of color.
Okay.
And it grew. And we embraced everybody, all ethnic groups, all kinds of people, all kinds of music, and we began to focus on Detroit music in particular.
All right.
And it's become a hell of a festival.
Ellen Mazurker, I just want to jump in. So Shane Park, now the Aretha Franklin Amphitheater,
right.
And then from there to Orchestra Hall, the Max M. Fisher Music Center, which obviously had its history as the Paradise Theater, and now here we sit today in the Rivera Court, which for what Concert of Colors was envisioned as and what these murals symbolically mean, kind of like the perfect room to be in, I think.
Yeah, amen. I think that, you know, we have pretty much all the venues, Kresge Court, the Rivera Court, the Film Theater, we're outside,
mm-hmm.
And we have traveling musicians and, you know, African dancers traveling around. And we're also in other venues at the same time. We're still in the DSO. We did a street party there. We are in the Science Museum, the Historical Museum, and
The Charles H. Wright Museum. Yeah.
Amen. The Charles H. Wright Museum had several events and several days of programming, and they're wonderful. So it's all been really great. We were up to about 100,000 people. We're now, you know, because of money and the tightness of the venues, we don't even want that, but we're still doing about 30,000 people a year.
IMPEC, every fourth Tuesday, 12 noon. Learn about people and organizations making a difference in your metro community. Get information on newly formed organizations seeking a change. Get updates from current organizations and people who are working to reach the need and concerns as well as serve. Join me every fourth Tuesday at 12 noon on IMPEC.
We have in our studio, Taslima, and I want you to pronounce your name.
Taslima.
Say that again for me.
Taslima.
Taslima. There we go. All right. Bay. All right. And she is now do you consider yourself a ragtime jazz pianist, or are you a jazz pianist? What's the best way of?
Ragtime jazz.
All right.
There you go.
All right. I had the opportunity of hearing her live at the CBS, we say, to the Concert of Colors. And if you weren't there, you missed her. She is a she's an artist. She's a person that, you know, you can see that she enjoys what she's doing. And the visual was everything. So tell us a little bit about Miss Bay and how you got into ragtime, because she's very good at what she does, okay? And I had to calm down. I'm just excited, okay?
Thank you so much. I got into ragtime as a search for African-American composers from the early 20th century, from 1900. I was a student at a college here in Michigan, and we were studying music history. And we studied Bach, and we studied Stravinsky, we studied Beethoven. We got to the 20th century, and we were studying these new methods of writing. And I asked about African-American composers from the 20th century, early 20th century, and my professor told me that there were none, because in 1900, black people could not read or write. And that kind of struck me as not true. I knew my grandmother was born in 1906, and she was very, very intelligent. She could read and she could write, and she could also read music. And my aunt graduated in 1913 from the Chicago College of Music. So I knew that was not correct. And that led me on a search. I went to the public library outside of college, and I looked at the Azalea Hackley collection, and wow. Mm-hmm. That was, wow, there was so much music. It's like, how could you miss this, right?
It was, yes.
So much music from the early, not only from the early 19th century, but from the early 20th century, but also from the 19th century. And so I wound up spending a good 2 years in that room. That was one of the best times of my life.
All right.
Studying that music.
All right. Now, that you were already into piano, studying piano at the time?
Oh, yes. I started piano informally, probably eight, like sitting under the piano, mm-hmm. listening to my brother play.
All right.
And we were not able to get lessons for me. My mother couldn't afford lessons until I was 16.
All right.
And then I just ate it up.
Okay.
You know? It was just like...
Now, are we talking the Detroit metro area here, that as far as where you were raised? Are we talking?
Born and raised Detroit.
Okay, all right. And so there was always the piano. Was not another instrument. Quite often, you know, when you talk to me.
Yeah, I studied clarinet, mm-hmm. and I played clarinet all the way up into a marching band.
All right.
In college, and I studied violin for just like one semester. And actually, I was in elementary school.
All right.
And but mostly, it's been piano. Piano is like my love.
All right. All right. Now, there is another. There's an Andy Bay. Is there any relation?
No.
Okay.
No,
all right. Good. I started to say Bay is some similar to Smith, but I know within that culture, there's a whole different history. So I'm not even going to. You know.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm not going to go there. All right.
Okay.
All right. Now, I had originally I had wanted to be able to play some of the music that we had from the concert, but there's certain limitations on that.
Really?
Yes. I didn't quite understand them, and the person who can best guide me to that, I was just so sure that I could do that, that I asked something, and then you know how you say that little voice, that voice in your head says, maybe you better check that out.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so the voice told me. And so there are special type of things that I was not able to gather. That's why I sent you the email to bring to bring the CD.
No problem.
So, and also I downloaded some things on my flash drive as well. But we're going to start off with one that you requested, The Entertainer, and then we will come back to you.
Thank you.
All right. Okay. And that was Mr. Joplin, okay?
Yes.
And one of the gurus of ragtime.
Yes.
Okay. I had a thought on my mind, but I'm going to let it pause right here. You were talking about piano. Ragtime was always... Were you kind of like the only kid on the block when it came to trying to focus on it?
Are you kidding? Yes. This music was like over 100 years old, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, but it called out to me when I first started reading it. You know, I got this music and, you know, I heard Entertainer. Mm-hmm. That was Maple Leaf Rag that just played. But I heard Entertainer because, you know, that was in that movie with Robert Redford.
Right, right.
But, and we played it in my high school marching band, and I liked it so much that I went and found the piano music for it, and I started learning on the piano.
Okay.
But when I started, really getting into it, it sounded like something I had heard before. It just sounded like coming home to me. And then I remembered my grandmother came up to Detroit from Mississippi. Let me see. She was born in 1901. She was 16. So about 1917, she came up to Detroit. And she used to go hear Bessie Smith and Fats Waller and all of those people.
All right.
At the daytime shows.
Okay.
And so those, Butterbeans and Susie, those are the songs that I grew up with. Because all right. She would sing them to me. And because they were from the same era, the same
yes.
time period. I think that's why that music sounded so familiar to me.
All right. And I know at the time at the Concert of Colors, when they introduced you, one of the things that he pointed out was that jazz, ragtime, I got two different thoughts going on at one time. That jazz is black classical was one point that he brought out.
Yes.
Ragtime, is that another subgenre of the black classical, or how would you?
I would say ragtime is one of the originators of American music, period.
Okay.
Including jazz.
Okay.
Because ragtime is a combination of a lot of different styles of music, of European music, Spanish music, African music. It has a march form.
Mm-hmm.
And it was actually the first music composed in America by Americans.
All right. Now, we had to do a little qualifier. There was the Native American Indians.
There was Native American.
All right, and they had their music.
Yes, and okay. that was incorporated. And I'm so sorry because you know Americans.
No.
But
I think we are conditioned to our you know what our environment tells us. So
there you go. There you go. But yeah, that part is in it because you know all of those cultures were in New Orleans at the same time.
Yes.
And New Orleans was like a kind of a different kind of place because, you know, they had the Congo Square.
Yes.
And that was one of the places, not the only place, but
right.
that was one of the places where music was not hampered.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
usually African music was, especially like in around before 1863, it was like, don't play that music.
Right, right.
It was
right.
kind of scary to people. But in New Orleans, they had the Congo Square, and I mean, they was thrown down like every week.
Yes,
you know.
Yes, yes.
And everybody came to Congo Square, and so that music, that rhythm, all those rhythms got mixed up together, and so that music became the basis of ragtime music.
All right, another question I want to ask because, and I was doing my research, St. Louis, the city, came up.
Yes.
Quite a bit as a part
yes.
of the where ragtime got has its roots too.
Yes.
So was it a dual, a parallel thing going on?
Well, you know, yeah, nothing happens like in isolation, right?
Right.
So you had music coming from New Orleans. You had music coming from Washington D.C.
Mm-hmm.
You had music coming from New York. Now remember the Mississippi River, right?
Right.
Runs from New Orleans all the way up, right?
Right.
Through St. Louis.
Up into Minnesota, which as I found out in my 40s, I'm dating myself. So I was in Minnesota, so let's go see the Mississippi River, and I'm going, wait a minute, we're up here.
Right,
getting ready
right.
going to Canada, and you're talking about the Mississippi River, okay.
And a lot of times bands would get... they get hired on those pleasure cruises because there was a cruise, you know, on the pleasure boats. And so that music traveled, and of course musicians traveled.
Right.
You know, and some of them went up to St. Louis. Some of them were born in St. Louis and came down to New Orleans.
Yes.
Then you had West Coast. You had Los Angeles. Because remember, black people were not confined to one area.
Yes.
Black people lived all over the United States from the 1600s.
Yes.
And they brought their culture and their music with them.
Right.
So I would hesitate to say that it was born in any one spot. I will say that New Orleans had a very strong pull on it.
Yes.
But then Kansas City is also had a strong pull. That's where you had Charlie Parker.
Yes.
Count Basie. All of those cats came from Kansas City, which had a strong, strong black music.
Right,
culture there.
Right.
And so did Detroit.
You know, and that's one thing I say when I have another name here, but I won't mention it on this particular program. But one of the things I do say is that once the music is played, it no longer belongs to whoever played it the first time.
There you go.
Okay, because depending on the person, you know, if they're whistling it or they're singing it or they're humming it, and then don't let a musician hear it, all right?
Becomes part of their repertoire.
Oh, repertoire, and then they do things with it. Like when you introduced your music at during the Concert of Colors, you were saying how Joplin may have originated, but you had someone else do an arrangement for you. You also talked about Marcus Belgrave. I've had him on my show, as well as Joanne. Musicians will take things, and, you know, depending on what their expertise is, what their background, because if I remember you correctly, you were saying how Marcus Belgrave put what you were doing down on paper.
Yes.
All right?
Yes.
And, okay, now if he put it down on paper, how were you playing that then?
I listened to a recording of Jelly Roll Morton playing King Porter Stomp, and I transcribed it.
Oh, okay.
And Marcus heard me play it, and we had kind of been fumbling with it with the band, because when I first started this band thing, Marcus Belgrave and Charlie Gabriel were our mentors, and they played. But they played because they knew the music, they lived the music.
All right.
They played their own arrangements of it.
All right.
No matter what I wrote down, they'd be like, okay, that's good, okay. But they knew what they were doing, and so
yes.
I learned so much from them. And just it was just one day after rehearsal, Marcus was like, you know what, we need to write this down.
All right.
And so I played King Porter Stomp, and he wrote right then. He wrote it and arranged it for Big Band. And when I was going back through it, I was just amazed at the articulation, because I remember that session.
Okay.
He did that like in 15 minutes.
He was amazing. He was
truly amazing.
He was truly amazing. And musicians, they, it's like once you're with another musician, then that's going to rub off onto you even.
Oh yes.
Yeah. Yeah, butter. You were sharing at the end of the Concert of Colors, you were sharing something about Jelly Roll Morton, but you also do. There was another little difference. Remember when we had electrical problems at Concert of Colors, and you were doing a description of something about the ragtime.
Why the that kind of introduced this piece, the Entertainer. Scott Joplin wrote the Entertainer, and we start this piece with a dirge. As in tribute to all of these musicians, all of these composers, because they composed this music at a time when it was very dangerous to be an African-American, to have dark skin, to be other, and especially in the South, but in the North as well. And they traveled all over the United States playing this music. Sometimes they had to play behind a curtain. As they traveled, this was also a time when it was literally legal to kill a black person.
Oh, what?
you would not get persecuted if you killed somebody who was black, and black people were hanging from trees. And I was always amazed as I was learning this music, I was amazed that they were able to write it. That they were able to travel, like we were just talking about how music travels around the United States, that they didn't stop writing, they didn't stop traveling, and they didn't stop playing music, even underneath these harsh conditions that they were living under at that time. The determination and their hope for the future, something that my grandmother had, that her parents had, I think... made a way for us to learn it. And so I was so grateful to them. One thing about these composers is that very, very few of them live long enough, live long lives. They all died like before 50. A lot of them died from simple things, like Fats Waller died basically from a cold. He didn't have health insurance, and he had to do the gig. He got on a train, and that was the last time, you know, that he played.
Right.
Scott Joplin died from syphilis.
Okay.
Jelly Roll Morton died from a stab wound that never healed properly. He was breaking up a fight in Washington. They also didn't have children. They didn't have legacy, you know, and I think that is a testament to the harsh conditions that they wrote this music under.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is why I do Entertainer Blues, because ironically the name of the song is The Entertainer, and I just thought about what it takes to be an entertainer. The show must go on.
Yes, and we were talking about jazz and then ragtime being a call. Blues was really the... I guess I'm not a musician and I'm not a historian either. I know that the church had a lot to do with carrying the music, but we're talking about something that's really outside. Really, you can't do that either. You know, now that I think about it, you can't do that either. But the point I'm trying to make, because before I get things totally messed up, is that blues is really kind of like the great-grandfather.
You know, Charlie Gabriel told me a story about how the blues was invented.
Mm-hmm.
And my mind, I want to say it came from Sidney Bechet, but I'm not sure. But he says the blues, a black man was half asleep.
Okay.
And you know that period right before you wake up.
Yes.
When you're not quite there, and he thought he was back in Africa, and he was thinking about, you know, his land and his mm-hmm. and his family. And as he became woke, as he became conscious all the way, he felt the chains on his wrist,
mm-hmm.
and he realized where he was. And Charlie Gabriel says that's when the blues were invented.
That's the best way for us to put it. Okay, now let's see if I got this together this time around. I did, okay. And you did play that at the Concert of Colors. And again, like I said, ladies and gentlemen, you had to see the lady perform because she enjoys her music.
I do.
And then also I was observing that when different the other artists would have their solos and things like that, she, that left leg of hers, you already knew when the next person would get her coming because that left leg would come up and she would hit that.
That's like a muscle, I think, a muscle reaction.
And it's not just her, because when I was doing, like I said, I was doing my research, and it seems to be more prevalent when you're doing the ragtime, because I watch other musicians, that those ladies are into the music just as much as whatever they're playing.
Oh, I feel so much better. I'm not alone. Okay.
No, you are not.
Okay. That music make you move. That music will make you move.
Yes, yes, yes. And I had another thought and question that just went right past me right that quickly. Maybe I'll come back around. The stomp, ragtime, are they synonymous, different, or...
A stomp is a dance. It came out as a dance. You know, they had the cakewalk, right?
Right. Now, you better explain to some people, because some people are under 22. You don't...
Okay, so the cakewalk was a dance that African Americans made up. And, you know, we could only party like every so often, but when we could party, we took advantage on the plantation and we partied down. So the cakewalk was a dance. It was like a dance competition.
Okay.
And whoever won got a cake.
Right.
That's why they called it the cakewalk.
Okay.
And if you knew how rare cakes were
back in the day, because what, sugar? Ooh.
Yeah, sugar. And just who got time to make a cake?
Who had the money to buy the sugar?
Right. Flour, wheat, all of that.
Yes, 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 yes.
But you got a cake. So the cakewalk, you know, time went on and other dances came in. And then there was a stomp. So right around the end of the ragtime period, this stomp dance came out and people were stomping. A lot of the composers started writing songs to go with that stomp. You had Kansas City Stomp. You had Cakewalk Stomp. I'm just making up names.
All right.
But the stomp became prevalent in the title and in the way that the music was written. So a stomp would actually be written into it. It'd be like, boom.
Okay.
And people would actually stomp to that. Just like, you know what, like we do the hustle now.
Okay. All right.
Step one, step two, step to the right, yes, step to the left. Yeah.
Okay.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. All right, but that's not ragtime, though. Or does ragtime got some of that in it, or what?
Yeah, that's toward the end of ragtime.
Okay.
So then it's moving on.
Mm-hmm.
You know how ragtime moves on, and then we got boogie woogie, and then stomps kind of took over from ragtime.
All right.
And then you had the boogie woogie.
Right.
Right. And you had those piano players, you know. And then and those came in because of the rent parties.
All right.
You know how we used to have rent parties.
Yes, yes. Okay. You know, real life will always, you know, impact what's going on.
Won't it? Won't it?
Yes. Now, you have, are you going to be at the Jazz Festival this year, here in Detroit? Or?
Not downtown, but I am going to be at Jazz on the Lawn.
All right.
And that's like the best. Good Lord, that's a good jazz festival to go to, because it's free.
Mm-hmm.
It's from 12 o'clock. It actually starts. It's at Saint Monica and Saint Augustine Church.
Okay, which is located where now?
It's on Seminole, 4151 Seminole.
Okay,
like a block north of Mac.
All right,
and a couple of blocks east of Van Dyke.
Okay.
But this is put on by Marjorie Gabriel and this church, and it's been going on for a while. This is like one of the best jazz festivals because the musicians, it's like we all meet each other.
It's like a jam session.
It's almost like a jam session, except the thing with Marjorie is when Marjorie calls you to perform, nobody says no.
Okay.
Marjorie said, I want you to come and be a part of this festival.
Mm-hmm.
And you just say yes, and you just come. That's all it is to it. But it starts at church.
All right.
And right after church, you know, she has a choir, fantastic choir.
All right.
Right after church, there's like a second line.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Gabriel family.
Right.
And Damian Gabriel has a second line, so you get to participate in the second line.
There was another thing that came up, is like with the second line, which is a tradition of New Orleans.
Yes, that's a New Orleans tradition.
All right. Okay, so they got us. Oh, I mean, we got so many different genres coming, pouring in here, the ragtime, the second line, and...
Oh, yes.
Okay.
So now you see what happened when my college professor told me that black people couldn't write music.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see all the music we're talking about right now?
Yes,
so
yes.
So we were, I mean, it was all over.
Right.
So that the thing about, and that's when I said, I'm going to tell. I'm the youngest in my family, so I'm a tattletale. I said, I'm going to tell everybody I see about ragtime, because the thing is that I'm classically trained.
Right.
And when I was a child, when I was first coming into music, music was something, the classical music world was something that I was always an outsider. It was like, you can never really be a part of this because you don't belong.
Right.
You're other.
Yes.
And knowing how my ancestors contributed to the music scene in Detroit, in America, really helped me out as a musician, as a person, helped my self-esteem. And I thought about it, what if the children coming behind me, they need to know that they have a part in this music world, in America's music.
Right.
They need to know that they are not other. This is their music.
Yes. Yes, and not be ashamed of it.
And not be ashamed, right.
Because now when we're just talking about the church and how they had their music, and really it's because people that are the ones that carry the music, so they weren't always in church.
Can I talk about, when you talk about being ashamed, can I just talk about this Tin Pan Alley music?
Yes.
Ragtime was composed by African Americans, and you've heard some of the ragtime.
Mm-hmm.
You've heard Scott Joplin's music. So it was very popular. Maple Leaf was the first million seller.
Mm-hmm.
It was played even before the King and Queen of England. It crossed the water. So what happened was, in New York, there were some white people who put out a degradation of black people, and they twisted the term ragtime, they twisted the song, they twisted it, and they had covers that were very derogatory, very degrading. They exaggerated our lips, they exaggerated our hair, the ragtime titles were very, very derogatory. I know I can't say it on the mm-hmm. on the air, but they were very, very bad.
Mm-hmm.
And that got put in with the minstrel shows. And so when Scott Joplin, actually, he wrote an opera called Tremonisha. And this I call it Tin Pan Alley. It was not even good music.
Right.
It was not viable music. It was just making fun of black people. That's the only thing was doing.
Okay.
Making fun. It was a parody of ragtime. But because the people who published it had white skin, it was taken more seriously than the people who had dark skin.
Yes, that was and that's the point. You bring up the point mm-hmm. that I was trying to make is that the ones we our forefathers, grandmothers, whatever. You can't say you really created music, but they expressed the music mm-hmm. Of their souls, of their being.
Oh, yes.
And then because of that twisting,
mm-hmm.
okay, we were, now I say we because I can remember when I was growing up, okay, I had to have listen to someone white tell me my music was good.
See?
And another part of the addition was that, you know, many black musicians, and I mean, it depends on what generation you were you colored black or Negro, had to leave the United States to get recognition, to even get their own acceptance of what they were doing.
They have a statue now of Sidney Bechet here, I think, in America. I think it's one in Kansas City.
Okay.
But when I first went to France, I saw a statue of Sidney Bechet. There mm-hmm. was nothing in America.
Right.
And this young lady, she was 13 years old. And, you know, we were mm-hmm. talking, and I said, oh, yeah, you know, I play piano, I play ragtime. She said, have you ever heard of Sidney Bechet?
And you said no.
No, I knew Sidney Bechet, okay. But I was just so shocked because I'm from America. Nobody, none of my students had ever heard of Sidney Bechet.
Mm-hmm.
This child was 13 years old.
Yes.
She knew more about our music history than we did.
Yes, yes. Yes, and that's the well, you know, that's the point we're trying to make. Okay, mm-hmm. that I was back when we did doing Black History. One of the things that came up was one of the professors was saying how his son was sharing something about Rosa Parks, and it was talking about her being this old woman, and he said, "Well, no. When she sat down on the bus, she was 42. She was not 70."
Right.
Okay.
There you go.
And, you know, so, and it was coming from an African-American child who was doing about what he was learning in school. And we're talking within the last 2 to 3 years. And so, to make a long story a little bit shorter, because this program's going by so fast because I'm so interested in it, was that his son, 9 years old, came up with, well, you know, I know what to do. We'll go back and educate our teacher. But his son came up with the point.
Yes.
Okay. Of the what he needs. So he said, "Not my 9-year-old son had to show me what I should have been doing." And so, you know, this is about what we're talking about, is there's this disconnect, all right, mm-hmm. of what we have, who we are, whose we are.
Right.
Okay. And it's all about music. And the thing about it is music, like once it's played, it's neither white, black, pink, or chartreuse.
It's music.
It's music mm-hmm. that can be shared. And that is a unifying force. But if we don't share, not aware, it gets lost.
Yes. A lot of people will think of ragtime, especially when I say I play ragtime, they'll think of it as minstrel music. And what I would like to say to those people is don't let other people take your legacy from you.
Yes.
Tin Pan Alley is not ragtime music. You know, there was some good minstrel music, but as a rule, minstrel music was pretty derogatory. Scott Joplin, Artie Matthews, Tom Turpin, James Scott, all of these people were geniuses.
Mm-hmm.
These were geniuses. They wrote music that still is relevant today. Don't let anyone define your history.
Right. And which was part of what they brought up about Concert of Colors, okay? That when you, America is a melting pot, but sometimes you can lose things if you can melt things too, whatever. So, and, okay, we'll leave that alone. Let's play a little bit of music while we get ourselves together.
Hit it, Katsunima.
Okay, that was Miss Bay along with her trio at that time.
Yeah, quartet. That was Charlie Gabriel
okay.
on clarinet.
Okay, all right. Okay, yes. Now you've had trios, quartets.
Oh, yeah.
Tell us about some of those little experiences. And time's going by so fast. We only have 12 more minutes left.
Oh, my goodness. It has been fun. Thank you so much. This has been such a nice thing.
Oh, goodness.
Well, you know, it's hard to feed a band of 8 to 10 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and this music is not easy. And I know a lot of people think musicians do it for fun, but, you know, it takes all of our time to learn this music. You have to train. There's an incubation period that's really hard. So musicians have to eat, and they have to pay mortgage, and they have to pay, you know, credit card bills.
all the things.
I mean, you know. So I will do our band. We adjust the size to accommodate the fee.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people cannot pay for an 8 to 10 piece band.
Okay.
They can only pay for a trio or a quartet.
Right.
And even having said that, I will say this, that Marion Hayden and Jalo Jakate, they command, they're internationally recognized musicians.
Right.
And I am so fortunate. I cannot pay them what they make when they do not play with me.
But you know,
they put so much into it. They take this music so seriously, and I would not be sitting here were it not for their support and for their mentorship.
And just to see how the musicians interact with each other, you know, if you didn't make Concert Colors is a unique experience that everyone needs to take advantage of. But when you saw how the musicians more or less. I want to use a slang got off of each other.
Can I speak to that?
Yes.
One of the things about our rehearsals was that with Marcus and Charlie was that we had all of these world class musicians, but nobody had a big head. Nobody said, like Marcus never said, I'm an internationally known musician and you have to do what I say. Marcus said, what do you think? And so did Charlie Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
And we had, like, our rehearsal sessions were more like interchanges, you know?
Yes.
So Charlie would come, Marcus would come, and I would say, I want to do this.
Mm-hmm.
And so Charlie would explain to me how to do it.
All right.
And then we would get to a point, and he would say, well, what do you think, Jalo? You know, mm-hmm. We were always considered equals, but it was an exchange of information, and we learned so... I'm a teacher, and you learn so much more when your teacher respects you as a human being.
Yes, 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 yes. What are your plans now for the future?
Wow, this is like a wave that I'm riding. I'm going to, we got the jazz festival. I've got a thing with Henry Ford in September 8th, I think. September 21st.
When you say Henry Ford.
Henry Ford, Greenfield Village.
Okay, all right.
I'll be playing for the Old Car Festival.
Okay.
And then I'm going to Illinois to play with another African-American ragtime pianist who is very well known, Reginald Robinson.
Oh, all right.
I'm going to be so excited to play with him. And then next year I'm going to be artist in residence in Sedalia, Missouri for a week, and then I'll be performing at the Scott Joplin Festival.
That's the only thing about radio. You should see her expression when she starts.
I'm excited.
Oh, I mean, she took on a glow. I mean, really, it is exactly what it was, a glow. All right. I mean, and she started talking about it, and when she got to that last little bit, her cheeks just, whew, okay.
It's wonderful to be able to share this music. I put so much time into it. Like you say, I was the only kid on the block. It's like, what you doing playing that old-time music? But I love it so much. And to be able to share it is wonderful. And that other people, when they hear it, when they like it, it just fills my heart up. Because it's like, see, this is really good stuff.
Mm-hmm. All right, now I've got two. We're going down to 7 minutes. She's got two songs here that she wanted, that she likes. And I think what we're going to do is we're going to go out with that. One is the King Porter Stomp and then Mr. Jelly Lord. We may not get all of them, but if they wanted to contact you or trying to find out some more about what you're doing.
Taslima@comcast.net.
All right.
And then I'm working on my Facebook page. Be patient with me. I know. I'm still in the 20th century, but I'm getting there.
Some
be patient
of us,
with me.
Some of us just put away our flip phones, okay?
Hello.
All right, so we're going to go off with something from her CD, which is called Taslima Bay Live. Live.
And can I say a plug that you can get it? You can get these CDs on cdbaby.com.
All right, okay.
Thank you.
Ellen, thank you very much for being a part of Impact.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
All right.
WHFR has brand new buttons, and we want you to have one for free. We are going old school with this promotion. Simply send us a postcard. Yeah, a real-life postcard with your name and address to WHFR Attention Buttons, 5101 Evergreen Road, Dearborn, Michigan, 48128. Let us know if you like blue or black better. Sounds of creative improvised music continue to wreak havoc over the airwaves. Now on Tuesdays from 7 until 10 p.m. right here at Henry Ford College Radio, WHFR Dearborn.
Mm-hmm. Listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
And dolls, you are at the malt shop with Daddy G. And we're going back to the 50s and the 60s. So hang those fuzzy dice on the rearview mirror, grab your favorite squeeze, and head on down to the malt shop, where the jukebox is playing, and the kids are dancing. And here we are, back in the 50s.
Tell you about the